Today's daf is Lamed Hey. We'll start on Lamed Vav Amid Beis with the Mishnah. And that Mishnah on Lamed Dalet Amid Beis is approximately 10 lines up from the bottom of the Amud. And the Mishnah says, Nasno B'Migdal, if he placed his Eruv on Erev Shabbos in a structure of some sort, a migdal, a tower, a little miniature tower, I guess you'd call it, the Oved HaMafteach. And now the Erev is locked up in this closet, but he doesn't have the Mafteach. So the Tanakhama says, Areza Erev, it's still valid. Hopefully he'll find the Mafteach, and he'll get access to the Erev. Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Rabbi Eliezer's opinion is that if he doesn't know where the Mafteach is, then Eino Eruv, it's not a valid Eruv, because Eruvo, hu ve'eruvo b'makom echad, can only apply when he has access to his Eruv, but now he doesn't find the Mafteach. Now, from the fact he says im eini yodea shamafteach bimkomo, it doesn't say im eina mafteach bimkomo. It seems that he has to know exactly where the mafteach is, and if he has a suffix where the mafteach is, he's not sure, he's in doubt, then it's not an eruv. And we're going to see later on that Rabbi Lezer holds like Rabbi Meir, who holds on daf lamed hey that a suffix eruv is possible. So since he's not sure where the Mafteach is, and therefore we don't know if he'll ever have access to the Eruv, then his Eruv is bottled. The Ritva's language is Dafka ksheino yodea shamafteach bimkomo. Im yodea shamafteach bimkomo. In other words, if he knows he put the key in a safe place, he just doesn't remember where that place is, then the Erev would be kosher, even according to Rabbi Eliezer, because he may remember, we assume eventually he'll remember where the Mafteach is. But our case is a case where he doesn't know where the Mafteach is. It's not that he knows that he put it away in a safe place. He simply has no knowledge where the Mafteach is. So the Gemara immediately asks, Vamai, why is it that if he put his Erev in a Migdal and the Mafteach was lost, nevertheless the Chachamim and Tanakhama say that the Erev is valid, who makomo echav Erev makomo acher, he doesn't have access to his Erev, and therefore you can't call that an Erev Techumen for Mazon Shtei Sudos. Rav Shmuel Darmi Travayu Hocha b'Migdal shel Levenim Askinon. What kind of a Migdal are we dealing with? It's a Migdal that's made up of bricks. And the Gemara is going to ask, is going to explain later on that these bricks are set up one on top of the other without any concrete in between them. And therefore, if he doesn't have access to the Mafteach, which is inside the Migdal, he can literally take apart the Migdal. And normally we would say that that's prohibited under Melechus Soser. But in this case, since there's no tit in between the levels of the bricks, as the Gemara will explain, therefore it's not considered Melechus Soser. And Rabbi Meir he? And this Tanakhama should be identified with Rabbi Meir, the Omar who holds in Masechta Beitza, with regard to Yontif, Poches Lechatchila Vinotel. That if he has something, we'll call it a mechitza for our purposes, that separates him from the food and he wants to use that food for an Eruv, then he's allowed even l'chatchila to be soser, to take apart that mechitza. Disnan, the Mishnah says, b'bayis shemil'u peros, if let's say he fills up a bayis, a room in his house with fruits, sosum, and yet it's closed on all sides, v'nifchas, but it broke, on its own it broke, is then on Yontif itself, notel mimokom apchas, according to the Tanakhama, the Mishnah, he's only allowed to take that which is accessible to through this breakage, the breached part of the mechitza, and there's no isa mechitza. I'm sorry, there's no isa mukta. And Rabbi Meir Omer poches v'notel chatchila, even though at this point there's not a breach that would allow him to put his stretch his arm inside and get access to the peros, nevertheless he's allowed to break apart this mechitza in order to get access to his peros, and it's not considered a violation of Meleches Soser. So the Gemara asks, Va Omar Av Nachman Bar Ada Omar Shmuel, when Rabbi Meir says that there's no Soser, that's only a certain case. That's called Ba'avira de Livni, where the bricks are set up one on top of the other without any cement that connects them, and therefore there's no Soser. The bricks don't really form a binyan, because a binyan means when you have one stone, one levena on top of the other with tit in between. So the Gemara answers, Hochenami ba'vir delivni. Our Mishnah also, in the case of a migdal, is talking about, as Shmuel and Ravitz said, a migdal shel levenim, and this migdal shel levenim has no cement that connects the levenim, and therefore there's no Meleches Soser. So the Gemara asks, V'amar Rab Zera b'yontif omru avalo b'shabbos. Only in this case of yontif were they matir, in this case of avira de livni, for the sake of simchas yontif, to allow him access to his food, but not on Shabbos. Shabbos is more chomer, and therefore how do we understand our Mishnah in the light of Rabbi Meir, if Rabbi Meir is talking about Yontif, and Gemara answers, Hachinami b'Yontif, our Mishnah is also talking about Yontif. And when the Mishnah says that you could be Machsha, the Eruv, that's inside this Migdal, even though it's locked up inside, the answer is because you can break down this Avira de Livni on Yontif for the sake of getting access to your food and fulfilling the great mitzvah of Simchas Yontif. But Enochinami, had it been Shabbos, then the Erev would be invalid. So Gemara asks, Yehochi, Hainu Diktoni Allah, how could we explain what we learn in a Braisa when the Mishnah says, Nosno li Erev habimigdal, v'ovid ha-mafteach, then it says, Rabbi Eliezer Omer im Ba'ir Ovad, this a Braisa, if the mafteach was lost somewhere in the city, Eruvo Eruv, the Eruv is valid. In Basada of it, ain't Eruvo Eruv. If it was lost in the fields, then his Eruv is not valid. Now, let's just go backwards here. Why is it that if he lost his Mafteach in the fields, the Eruv is invalid? And the answer is because a field has the status of a Carmelis, and he wants to take his food that's inside the Migdal. And the Migdal is a Rishus HaYochid. So he wants to take the key that he lost in a Carmelis and transport it to the Migdal, which is in his private possession, surrounded by Mechitza Rishus HaYochid. That he's not allowed to do. So he has no possibility of opening the Migdal. But if, on the other hand, the Maftech was lost in the city, here we're going to invoke the Shita of Rabbi Shimon that we mentioned a few times in the past. Rabbi Shimon holds that you can take and carry something derech rishus hayochid in a private area, from chatzeros to gagos to karpifos, from courtyards up to roofs and through areas that are open. And Rabbi Shimon allows you to carry from one place to the other. So therefore, if he lost his key within the city, then the premise is that if he carries the key from any of these different places, it's all considered one rishus, and that's mutter. But in any event, we see clearly that this Bryce understood that our Mishnah was talking about a case of Shabbos, and enters into the whole issue of can you carry the key and get it over to the rishus hayochid where the migdal is or not. I mean, none of that would be relevant to Yontif, because there's no Yisro Tzah in Yontif. So how can you tell me that our Mishnah is talking about Yontif? So the Gemara answers, "Chisure mechsure v'hachi k'tani." We have to add a few words to this brisa, and we'll read it like this: Nisano b'migdal. If he puts his erev in a migdal, v'nol b'fanav yavad amavtech, he lost the key to the migdal. Raise the erev b'medvaru b'yontiv. Al b'shabes ein eruvo eruv. And the brisa itself, according to this new formulation, differentiates between Shabbos and Yontif. And the heter here is on Yontif, because the Chachamim were matted to be soser, in order to break apart this Migdal, in order to get access to the Eruv, if he cannot find the key that opens up the Migdal, and that they allowed on Yontif for the sake of Simchas Yontif, but not on Shabbos. Then the Brisa goes on and says, "Nivtzal mafteach bein ba'ir ubein basada ein eruvo eruv." If during the course of Shabbos, now we move on to Shabbos, he finds the mafteach, then it's completely osur, meaning the eruv is possible, and it doesn't matter where he finds the mafteach, because he cannot carry the mafteach through a city or through a field in order to open up his migdal where he has the Erev. So the Erev is considered b'makom acher. But Rabbi Eliezer omer b'ir eruv ha'erev b'sada ein eruv ha'erev. Rabbi Eliezer holds like Rabbi Shimon that within the city, if you're carrying it from a gag to a karpaf to a chatzah, etc., etc., it's mutter. So therefore, if he lost the key in the city, he'll be able to carry the key and bring it to the migdal in Rishus HaYochid and open up the Migdal, get access to his Erev, the Erev is valid. But if he lost the key somewhere out in the fields, which is a Carmelis, then he has no access to the key to bring the key into Rishus HaYochid to open up the Migdal. The Gemara now explains Rabbi Eliezer Shita. Be'ir Eruva Erev Kit, Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Eliezer is built on the premise, the Shita of Rabbi Shimon. And therefore, if he finds the key within the city, there's a way to relocate the key, to transport the key back to his Rishus HaYochid, to open up the Migdal, get access to his Eruv, because Rav Shimon holds later on in Masechta Eruvin, Echad Gagos, Echad Chatzeros, Echad Karpifos, Rishus Achasein LeKelim Sheshav Subayan, B'tochon. In other words, if there was a kli, any sort of utensil, that with the onset of Shabbos found itself in any of these different places, Gagos, Chatzeros, Karpifos, inside the city, and even if these different areas were owned by different people, so Reuven owned the Gag and Shimon owned the Chatzer, Levi owned the Karpaf, nevertheless, it's mutter to carry it from one of these to the other. And all this is based on the fact that each one of these areas is called Ein Tashmisham Miyuchad V'Todir. And therefore, they're all similar, and they belong to one entity. It's considered one rishus for the kelim sheshavsu besocham. You're allowed to be metaltel from one rishus to the other, even without an eruv. And therefore, you can bring this mafteach to the migdal through the gagos for karpifos and the chatzeres of the city. But nimtza besade ein eruvo eruv kirabanon. But if he finds the key in the sade out there in the open fields, then he'd have to violate the Isur Rabban of carrying it from a Carmel to Rishus HaYochid. And we're holding now, Rabbi Eliezer's holding like the Rabbanon, that Kol Milsa, the awesome Mishum Shavuos, Gozer Be'afilu Ben Hashmasha. So going into Shabbos, he has no access to the Eruv, because the Eruv is in a Rishus HaYochid, and the Mafteach to open up and get access to the Eruv is in a Carmelis. And this Isur is Chal already in Beit Hashmashas. Now the Gemara goes back to a new interpretation and answer to the original question that we asked back on Daf Lamed Daled Amud Beis. Why is it that the Kanakamana Mishnah says that if he places his Erev in a Migdal and he loses the Maftech, the Erev is valid? We should have said that since he doesn't have access to his Erev, then it's who b'mokom echad v'eruvo b'mokom acher. How and why did the Tanakama validate the Eruv? So we had the first answer of Rav and Shmuel that we were talking about Avira de Livni, that he can actually break down that Migdal in order to get access to his Eruv, at least on Yontif, if there's no Meleches Soser because there's no tit between the Levanim. Now we have an alternative answer. Rabba v'Rav Yosef Yamich Ravai, their answer was, Hocha v'migdal shal eitz askinon. Here we're talking about a migdal, and that's where he put his Erev that's made of wood. Now, in order to understand how Rav and Shmuel gain anything by substituting wood for bricks, so we have to answer the following. That this Migdal is a very large object, and it would have the volume that would be fit for our Arboim Saw. And once it's our Arboim Saw, then it loses its shame Keli. And this we're going to borrow from Hilchus Tumah V'Tara, as we'll see in just a moment. The Gemara says, Ma'ar Savar, according to Tanakama, Klihu, no matter what the size of the Migdal is, it still retains its status as a Kli. And it's not a building, it's not a structure, it's not a binyan. V'ein binyan b'kelim, v'ein stir b'kelim. So that he actually could break down this Migdal in order to get access to his Eruv on Shabbos, because there's no binyan b'kelim, and despite the large size of this Migdal, it still retains its status as a Kli. Umar Savar, Oelhu. But Rabbi Eliezer is of the opinion that this Migdal of Eitz, because it's so large, it's Yatza Mitores Kli. And the reason for that is because if you would imagine that this gigantic Migdal was filled from bottom to top with merchandise, you would not be able to carry it. And a Kli, by definition, is something that you carry it when it's mole, when it's full. And therefore, it has the status of an Oel. And if it has the status of an oil, it's a binyan. It's connected to the karka. And you're not allowed to be sosarin on Shabbos, even though ain't binyan b'kelim on Shabbos, ain't stira b'kelim on Shabbos. But here we're not talking about kelim. We're talking about a bona fide oil. So the machlokas tanoim really reduces to the fact of what is the status of the migdal that's larger than 40 saw. Is it a kli or is it an oil? And this machlokas, we'll see, finds its original source in Tumah V'Tara. Ubeplukta Dahani Tanoi. And now, what we're going to introduce is a Mishnah in the fourth parak of Masechta Zavin. And Halacha is, as far as Tumah Zav is concerned, he transmits Tumah through what's called Heset, when he leans on something. Or, alternatively, when he causes something to move. Usually when he leans on something, he causes it to move. But even if he does it from a distance, he's not actually in contact with the object, but he causes its movement, then he transmits the tumah of a zav. Disnan hikish al gabishida tevu migdal tmeim. Now, this is the Tanakama of the Mishnah in Zavin, who maintains that despite the very large size of this shida, it's enough to contain a volume of liquids that would be our boim saw. And he didn't touch the migdal, but he transmitted tumas heset. Why tumas heset? Because he took his fist, and let's say he was wearing gloves or whatever, so there was no tumas maga, but he gave a smack on the shida, and the shida, as a result, starts shaking. We'll call it kinetic energy, for argument's sake. Anyway, now the shida, Teva Migdal, contracts tumah, according to the Tanakama, Rabbi Nechemiah, Rabbi Shimon, Mitarim. And Rabbi Nechemiah, Rabbi Shimon insists that since this shida is so large that it contains 40 saw, it loses its status as a kli. It becomes an ohel, and an ohel is mechubel lekarka. Mechubel lekarka is not mekabel tumah, and therefore the shida teva migdal remain tahorim. My lab halka mifli, mar the tanakama holds savar kliu, that despite the large size of the shida, it still retains its status as a kli, and therefore it's mekabel tumah. And again, you're talking about kliates, but they have a kli kibul, right? We're talking about something like a migdal that has a receptacle inside. There's empty space inside. It's not a flat kli. Umar sabar Rabbi Nechemiah Rabbi Shimon hold that a kli that contains such a large volume of arbaim sa'ah is no longer a kli. Oel, who it has the status of an oel, and oel is not makabel tuma. And now the Gemara is going to take this machlokes between the Tanakama on the one side, Rabbi Nechemiah Rabbi Shimon on the other side, and apply it to our Mishnah. And we're going to say that if the Eruv was inside this Migdal that has the capacity volume of holding on to 40 saw, then would there be stira? Would you be prohibited on Shabbos to break down this Migdal? And it depends. If it's a Kli, then we're going to activate the principle of Ein Stira Bekelim. And we're going to hold now, like the Tanakama, that despite the large size of the Migdal, it still is a Kli, which is a Chumra Le'inyan Tumah V'Tara, but a Kula Le'inyan Shabbos if he breaks the Kli. Umar Sovar, Rabbi Nechemiah, Rabbi Shimon, the opinion that a Kli that could hold 40 so is not a Kli, it's an Oel, which again is a great Kula as far as Kabbalah's Tumah is concerned, but it's a Chumra as far as Meleches Soser is concerned, because although Ein Stira B'Kelim, but once you status, you classify it in the status of an Oel, then there is Stira, and therefore there's no way you could get access on Shabbos to your Erev, and therefore Rabbi Eliezer holds that the Erev is possible. Omer Abaye V'Tizbara, is it really logical to say that the Machlokas here in the Mishnah in Zovin between Tanakama and Rabbi Nechemiah revolves around the issue of whether a migdal that could contain 40 saw is nevertheless a kli, or it loses status as a kli and has status of an oel? Vasanyal quote a brisa. The brisa says that oel, you have an oel that's not really knocked into the ground in a very secure way. Venisat. And now, when somebody went ahead and banged on this oel, you know, knock knock, then the oel moved from its place. It was what's called nekar mimkomo. And what's the status now of the oel? So the brisa says tame. The oel is tame. But if it would have been a kli and not an oel, and the kli was, let's say, connected down to the karko, it's very heavy, v'eino nisat, in such a way that even when the Zav bangs on the Kli, nevertheless it doesn't move an inch. So there was no energy force from the Zav that caused the movement of the Kli, is Tar. So you see here clearly that even an Oel, when it's Nisat, becomes Tame. So you can't tell me that the reason why in the Braisa we saw that Rav Nechemiah and Rav Shimon on Mitara, because they hold it's an Oel, we see clearly that even an Oel is Makabel Tumas Hesed. And therefore, as far as Tumas Hesed of a Zav is concerned, there's no difference whatsoever between a Kli and an Oel. And therefore, as far as the Machlokas Tanoim, in the case of Shida Tevu Migdal, when the Zav banged on it, whether the Shida is Makabel Tumah or not, you cannot say it's a Machlokas whether it's a Kli or an Oel, because everybody would agree that even if you call it an Oel, nevertheless it's Makabel Tumah's Hesed. And Abai continues to reject this explanation of the Machlokas, because he says, V'ketoni Seifa, in the Seifa, that very same Tosefta, which we mentioned before, of Hikish Agave Shida, it says, V'im Hoyu Nisotim Tmeim, that if the Shida Tevo Migdal were moved from their place when the Zav banged on it, even Rabbi Nechemiah, Rabbi Shimon would agree that it's Tomeh. Zaklal Nisat Machmas Kocho Tomeh, Machmas Re'odah Tor. If the force of the banging of the Zav on the Kli causes it to move, that's called Kocho, then Tumas Hesed is a reality. But in Machmas Re'odah, if on the other hand, let's say the Zav would bang on the floor with his foot or his hand, and as a result, a Migdal would start moving, Tahar. Because then we don't consider that he moved the Kli in a direct way. It was only indirect. He banged on object X. Object X, once it got shooken up, that's called Re'odah, there was a tremor, and it caused some object B to move. That indirect movement is considered koach kocho, And that's a whole sugya Masech Tamakis, that Koach Kocho is not considered Kocho. Elo Amar Abai, Dekuli Alma Heseit Machmas Kocho Tome Machmas Ra'odah Tor. Both the Tanakhama and Reb Nechemi and Reb Shimon, they all agree that if the Heseit on the Kli, or whether it be a Kli or an Oel, was Kocho, that means when he banged it, that direct bang, as it was received by the Kli, it caused the Kli to move, then the Kli contracts Tumas, Zaf, Hesed of Zaf, and no one questions that. But if it was Machmas Ra'adah, if the Zav banged with his foot on the ground, and it caused some sort of tremor, a little bit of a minor earthquake that causes the Kli to move from its place, Tahar, Hacha, what's the Machlokes, Bira'adah, Machmas Kocho Askinon. He has a case where the Zav bangs, and although it doesn't move immediately from the place where it was, the object, right? But he creates a ra'ada with the hakasha by banging. It makes he's not banging on one object like the floor and creating a tremor. He bangs directly on that object, but he doesn't move the object because of the banging. I mean, here we have to take a quick course in physics, but rather what he does is he puts an energy force into that Kli, which is called Ra'adah, and that's what causes the Kli to jump and move. This is similar enough to Kocho that it contracts Tumah, because it's not that the Kli immediately jumped as soon as the Zav banged on it. The Zav created a certain energy force around the Kli, and that energy force caused the Kli to move, and that's called indirect. That's not Kocho, and therefore it's Tar. But as a result, we see that the Machlokas here in this Mishnah in Zavin about Hikish, Al-Gabi, Migdal, etc., they're not arguing about whether the Migdal has the status of a Kli or an Oel. So therefore, Masnisim v'may Mukmino, let's go back to our Mishnah, which records a Machlokas about the case of an Eruv, if it was placed in a Migdal and it's locked, he doesn't have access to open it, and the Migdal is 40 saw, it could hold 40 saws worth of liquid, and therefore it has the status of an Oel. And the question is, L'chori, you're not allowed to be Sosaran on Shabbos, how could the Tanakhama validate the Eruv? Abai v'Ravadami Travayu b'manul Vekotur b'misna askinon. The case in our Mishnah is where the Migdal is locked. However, the key to the Migdal is not locked inside the Migdal, but rather there is a rope that is attached to the outside of the Migdal, and at the end of the rope there is a key. And now he wants to get access to his Eruv by using the key and opening up the Migdal. And the question is, in order to free the key so that it's accessible to open up the Migdal, he needs to cut the rope. Ubay sakina lemifsake. And there's no way he could cut the rope without a knife. That's how thick the rope is. Tanakama sova. The Tanakama validates the Eruv. Ki Rab Yossi relies on Rab Yossi the Omar. Reb Yossi, later on, at the end of Masechta of Shabbos, is quoted as saying that all kelim are mutter, and there's no isur tiltul, except for very, very expensive kelim, which is called Meser HaGadol, a gigantic saw, or Yosei Shel Machresha. They had in the plows very sharp, you know, blades, and that's called Mukta Machmas Chisaron Kis. Nobody would want to touch it because if you play around with it, you might actually dull in a very expensive Kli. It's no longer functional. And therefore, this Sakin that you need to cut the rope in order to get access to your Eruv is not one of those special Kalim that is very expensive, Machmas Chisaron Kis. Therefore, there's no Isur Tiltul. And therefore, he's allowed to take this knife and use it to cut the Hevel and open up the Migdal. Rabbi Lezer says, Nein, Sovala, Ki Rabbi Nechemio, Diomar, Afilu Talis, Afilu Tarvot, Eni Tolom, El Tzokshash Mishon. And the last part of Masechta Shabbos, is dedicated to understand the Shita of Rabbi Nechemia. He has a very unique Shita as far as Isur Tiltul is concerned. And according to his Shita, you're only allowed to be metaltil, a klisha melachto le'isur, litzorech davar hamiyuchadlo. And this knife was miyuchad, was designated for cutting meat or whatever it was used for, cutting other foodstuffs, but not to cut a rope. And according to Rabbi Nechemia, therefore there's an isur tiltul, you're not allowed to take this knife for the purpose of using it for something other than its original designation. And therefore, Rabbi Eliezer holds the air of his batel, is invalid, because you cannot get access to your Erev. You can't move this knife in order to get access to your Erev. So let's just summarize three different approaches to explain the Machlokshin, Tanakami, Rabbi Lazar, and our Mishnah in the case where the Erev was placed into a Migdal and the Mafteach is not accessible, whether the Erev is valid or not. Rav and Shmuel hold that we're talking about Avira de Livne. And since Avira de Livne on Yontif, you're allowed to take apart this Migdal because it's not Soser Doraisa, and they were Matir Soser Drabbanon for the sake of Simchas Yontif. The Tanakam holds like Rabbi Meir that on Yontif, you're only allowed to be Poches. I'm sorry, the Tanakam holds like Rabbi Meir that on Yontif, you're allowed to be Poches. You're allowed to break down this this Migdal in order to get access to the food inside of it. Rabbi Lez holds no, that you're not allowed to be poches this Migdal. Then we have the second Mahalach, which is Rabbi Rav Yosef, and we're talking about a Migdal Shel Eitz, and it's a very large Migdal that can contain liquids more than 40 sod. Tanakam holds it's a Kli, and therefore Ein Binyan Ustira Bekelu. Rabbi Eliezer holds it's an Oel, and therefore there's an Isur Soser in Oel. And finally, we have the approach of Abai V'Rava that we're talking about a Migdal which is locked up, and there's a rope that's tied down to the Migdal, and the rope is holding on to the opening, the key, and the question is whether he is allowed to use a sakin to cut the rope, and that depends on the machlokas about Tiltul Kalim on Shabbos. Now we're up to the Mishnah here on Daf Lamed Hayom and Aleph. The Mishnah says he put his Eruv at the very end of the Tchum in order to establish a new Tchum, another 2,000 Amah, but Nizgalgil Chutz L'Tchum. But the Eruv was blown away and it ended up outside the Tchum. And now we're in a situation where from his bias, where he went to sleep at night on Shabbos, until the Makom Eruv is more than 2,000 Amah. Alternatively, Nafal Olav Gal, there was a slight avalanche of stones that fell and buried the Eruv. O Nisraf, what the Eruv was burnt by a fire, went up in smoke. Or Truma Venitmes, he was Ma'ariv with Truma, and then a Sheretz fell on top of the Truma, and now becomes also Bachila. So in all these cases, the Mishnah has one rule. Mibodyom, if any of these occurrences that we enumerated happened before Shkia, is then an Eruv, because in Bein HaShmoshos, when the Eruv should be Chal, it's already Einu Yochol Li'ochlo, but Mishakashecha, if for one moment entering into Shabbos, he had access and he was able to eat this Eruv, then what happens to it subsequently is irrelevant. Hareza Eruv, it's engraved in stone with the outset of Shabbos. Now the Mishnah goes on to ask, what about a Suffolk situation? I don't know exactly when this kilkul of the Erev happened. Was it before Chashecha, Mibodjom, or was it after Chashecha? So we have a Suffolk Erev. Is Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yehuda, Omer, Mareza, Hamar, Gamal? I'll explain that in just a minute, because first let's get the easiest Shita, and that's Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Shimon, Omerim, Suffolk Erev Kosher. The status of an Erev is like any Drabonon, and Suffolk Lekula. The Mishnah actually concludes by testifying that we accept the Shita of Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Shimon, or Rabbi Yossi of Tulmus, that's one of the Chachamim Heid, he testified, Mishum Chamishas Kenim, that he was aware of five different Tanoim who maintained the principle al Sofek Erev Kosher, that like Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Shimon, a Sofek Erev is Kosher. So now we get back to Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda. And they say Chamar Gamal. Chamar Gamal is a metaphor for a situation where you have a tug of war pulling in two different directions, and therefore you're going to have to take the chumrah of both directions. So let's say, for example, if we assume the Erev is valid, then he'd be allowed to go 2,000 amah in each direction from the Erev. And that means he could go to the west, he could go to the east, 2,000 amah in each direction. If, on the other hand, the Erev was burnt already before Shabbos, we don't know, then his Tchum Shabbos, his Makom Shvisa, is in his house. And now in his house, he's allowed to go 2,000 amah to the west and 2,000 amah to the east. So it turns out is, if he put the Eruv at the end of 2,000 amah, let's say to the east, then there's an overlap, what we might call a mimadavshach, of the 2,000 amah from his house. But that's going towards the east. His other 2,000 amah towards the west, that's usur. Why? Because it could very well be that his Erev is valid. And if we flip it around, let's say, for example, he wants to carry 2,000 amah to the east of his Erev. Well, it could be the Erev went up and spoke before Shabbos, so he doesn't have that extra 2,000 amah, because that 2,000 amah would be 4,000 amah away from his house. So basically, the only area that he's allowed to carry in and walk around in on Shabbos is the overlap between his house and his Eruv. But anything beyond, in either direction, the 2,000 amah towards your west or towards your east, that's prohibited, because we don't know if the Eruv is valid or not. And this is basically a principle of Safek Eruv Lahachmir, and that's the Shita Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda. The Gemara says, Nisgalgil chutz l'tchum, Amar Rav lo shanu elishan is galgil chutz li arba amos. Aval betoch arba amos is no sein eruvo yesh lo arba amos. Whenever a person puts down an eruv, we give him automatically a kinyan shvisa for a radius around his place for 4 amos in each direction. So that now, when we talk about the eruv that rolled a little bit beyond 2,000 amos, it's got to be 2,004 plus. But if it's 2004, then it's still within his tchum, and the Erev would certainly be valid, even though it rolled, because we give him that 4 amos gratis. You may remember this from a discussion that we had last week. The Mishnah says, Nafal of Agal, that there was an avalanche that fell on the Erev before Shabbos, Kasal Kedaitach. Right now, the Gemara thinks the Iboy Motzi Shokilei, that if he would make the effort, he would be able to clear out all these boulders that fell as a result of an avalanche, and he can take out his Eruv. So why is the Eruv invalid? The answer is because it's mukta. We're not allowed to have access and move avanim, stones. Is lay masdis lo karebi di karebi omar, called over shumishum shvus lo gozuberi beta shmoshos. In other words, Rebbe says no shvusim applying beta shmoshos at the moment that the Eruv should be chal, even if you're going to tell me that it's Avonim, which normally would be Muksa, but the Eastern Muksa doesn't set in until after Ben HaShemashos. Therefore, Ben HaShemashos, there's no Gzeres Chachomim of Muksa, and therefore he could be Mefana, he could take apart the Avonim. Again, he could have, theoretically, taken apart the Avonim at that moment of Ben HaShemashos, and have access to his Erev, and therefore the Erev is valid at that point. Gemara says, Nei, Nafi, Lutemi Keremi, I could even reject the Shita of, just 1 second, even if you'll tell me I'm Mishnah holds like Rebbe, and now you're asking why would the Erev be possible? Why would we undermine the validity of the Erev since we're holding that there's no Issa Ben Hashmash until Tumukta? Is lo tzricha de boy marav chatzino. We're not talking about a case where he can, with his hands, just simply remove the stones, then Rebbe would certainly say the Erev is valid. But rather, we need there's such heavy-duty stones that fell on top of the Erev that he needs professional, hardcore machinery, to dig up the stones, and that's a malacha. Now, exactly what malacha it is to dig up the stones, with a keli, so that's a machlokes as to whether or not that comes under the malach of choresh, which means to dig into the ground, or maybe it's malachas bona. Honestly, I never understood the opinion that there's malachas choresh, because we don't know that he has any intention of planting. Choresh means when you make holes in the ground to prepare for planting. Here he's not interested in planting. I would go with those shitos that hold here it's malachas bona. Now, the Gemara says that we have to understand in our Mishnah all these different cases. Why do we need all these cases? For example, we started with a case of this galgel, and then we got a case of an avalanche. So the Gemara says, Utsrich, we need all these cases. Why to eat on in this galgel if we only had the case where the Eruv rolled outside of 2,000 plus 4 amos is Mishum de Lesa Gabe. The Eruv and himself are in two different places. Avol Nofel of Agag, the Isa Gabe. The Eruv is really in the same place that he is. They're both within the same tchum of Alpayim Amo. Is Emo Levi Eruv? Maybe we say it's an Eruv. And the Mishnah therefore has to emphasize that there's no valid Eruv over here because he has no access to eat the Eruv. The Eton, on the other hand, if it said Nofel of Agal, is then we would say Mishum de Michse. The Erev is completely out of sight. It's completely covered by the stones that fell through this avalanche. I'm on this Galgil, but if he can look and see the Erev, Zimnim Diosi Ziko Maisile, he may be able to stand there and hope that the wind will blow it back. The same wind that blew it outside of the Tchum will blow it back into the Tchum. Emel Evi Erev, I think that the Erev is valid. And therefore, Tzrich, I need the mission to teach me that the Erev is not valid, even in the case of Nisgalgil. He says, Shema af she Nisgalgil ha-Erev ef shalom shebiniach kova kanesh visoso. Even though the Erev has blown away, he can still say, I claim I was kover my shviso. Because there's a possibility that the Erev will go back to that place. O Nisraf, O Betrumet Meya, Shenitmes, Lomeli, why do we need these two cases? So my answer is Tana Nisraf, and here we turn to Daf, Lamed, Hamed, Beis, Lo Diacha Kochan de Rabbi Yossi. How far did Rabbi Yossi go to be Mekil, and he validates this Erev? Even though it's a suffix. And the answer is that you would have said that here we cannot apply the din of suffix to say that Bein HaShmashos, this object was still alive and well, because the object is now Afer. It's ashes. And you would have said that Rabbi Yossi would have to agree that you can't say that I'm going to take ashes and assume that the food was alive and well on Bein HaShmashos. Tana Truma v'nitmes, but in the case of Truma, there we have a chazaka. We assume the Truma is still Tahor until we know otherwise for sure that it became Tameh. Is Lodir HaKochad Rabbi Meir? To what extent did Rabbi Meir go? How far did he go? Is he willing to say that even in a case where we should say Mamid Namid Es HaTruma v'cheskes Taroso, and nevertheless, Rabbi Meir is going to invalidate the Eruv. So Gemara asks, Sova Rabbi Meir Sveika L'chumra? Can we reconcile this statement of Rabbi Meir in our Mishnah that a Sufek Eruv, we don't know if the Eruv was alive and well in its proper place with the onset of Shabbos or not, and therefore Rabbi Meir invalidates the Eruv L'chumra? Vatnan, I'm going to prove to you from Mishnah Mikvos that Rabbi Meir himself would hold that in the case of a Suffolk Eruv, we would go Lakula. Now keep in mind, this Brisa that we're learning from, this actually Mishnah, from Masechta Mikvos, does not officially record the Shita of Rabbi Meir, but we have a principle called Stam Mishnah Ki Rabbi Meir. Tomei Sheyored Litvol, he was definitely Tomei. And now we don't know if the tefillah was meaningful or not, to be metire him. Safek Taval, Safek Lo Taval. We're not sure if he actually made it into the mikvah or not. Or Afilu Taval, we know he went into the mikvah, Safel Taval, Arbaim Yisaw. We don't know if this mikvah was kosher and it had the minimum of 40 saw, Safek Lo Taval, Arbaim Yisaw. Or V'chein shnei mikvos. He knows that one mikveh has 40 saw. The other mikveh doesn't have 40 saw. V'tov v'yachs v'ni v'yidei beiz men toval. He doesn't know which mikveh he went into. Sveiko tome. Now we have to assume that since he had a chazak of tumah, until we know certainly that he was metayer himself through a tefillah hamitaheres, then we have to assume status quo and maintain his chazak that he's tumah. But med v'ramurim b'tumah chamura. That we only apply to tumah doraisa, like an avatumah. Avol b'tumah kala. And we're going to have an example now of a rabbinic tumah, kigon sha'achal ochlim tmeim. V'shasa mashkim tmeim. This was all part of the gzera of the Yud Ches gzeros at the end of the first parak of Masechta Shabbos. Because on a doraisa level, when you eat tmeim, the ochel does not transmit tuma to the gavra, to the person. Or, for example, haba, he came into a mikvah rosho v'rubah v'mayim she'uvim, and he was mostly covered by mayim she'uvim, water that came from a kli that was poured in that spot. So imagine you have a river, which or mayan, it's got tons and tons of water cubic, right? And then he threw in mayim she'uvim and he jumped into that place. So most of his body was covered in that circumscribed place where there were mayim she'uvim, and that's a tumah derabbanan. Oh, shenaflo arosh of aruba shlosh logim mayim she'uvim. There was another gzera at the end of the first parak of Masechta Shabbos that if a person comes out of a mikvah and he goes into a shower, and he gets poured upon three lugim of mayim shuvim, he's tamei, v'yored litbol. In all these cases, he was a tamei derabban, and he went into a mikveh sofik tovel, sofik lo toval, and we don't know whether he went in or he didn't go in. Bafilu toval, sofik tovel b'arbaim saw, sofik lo toval b'arbaim saw, we don't know if there were 40 saw. Or shnei mikvos, achas meim b'arbaim saw, v'achas meim b'arbaim saw, v'tov v'achas saw, v'achas saw, v'achas saw, v'achas saw, he doesn't know which mikveh he went into. In all these cases, Rabbi Meir holds, sveiko tor. So you see that once you reduce the status of the tumah from a doraisa to a drabbanon, then we apply the principle of sofik drabbanon l'kula. And that tanakama is Rabbi Meir. So if Rabbi Meir applies Sofik Tara, Sofik Tvila, Tar, in the case of a Tumah Drabbanon, then in Tchumen, which is only an Isu Drabbanon, we should likewise assume that the Eruv in a Sofik situation was a valid Eruv. As opposed to the Mishnah Mikvos, the name of Rabbi Yossi, who's Mitame, who applies the principle of Lechumra even in a Sofik Tumah Drabbanon. So my answer is, Kasav Rabbi Meir Tchumin Doraisa Ninu. Rabbi Meir is one of those few Tanoim, like Rabbi Akiva and others, who hold that Tchumin is Doraisa. So therefore, Sofik Erevin is a Sofik Doraisa, and therefore he's Machmir. So Gemara argues, Vesav Rabbi Meir Tchumin Doraisa. We have a special Kula, which is called Havla, or Makadrin Behorin. These are different types of Kulos that we apply to an Erev Tchumen. Why? Vasnan, we have a Mishnah later on Daf Nun Ches, with regard to Medida. Medida means the system by which we measure Alpayim Amma outside the boundary of the outer boundary of the city. And that's where we're going to set up our Erev Tchumen. And now we have to be modeed, we have to measure 2,000 Amma. And they used to do so with what's called a chevel, a kind of a rope. A special kind of rope was made of linen. And one person would hold the rope on this side, and the other on the other side. The rope was always 50 amma long. And that's how they measured 50 amma. And then they go on and on and on until they got to 2,000 amma. And now they get to a point outside the city, which is a ravine. Now, if you're going to measure down to the ravine and up again, you'll get a lot more than 50 amma. So the kula was mavlio. Mavlio means you could have one person stand on the ground on one side of the ravine and the other on the other side of the ravine. They will stretch it and they'll save all that distance that goes down. So that's going to give you a kula that you can extend the Tchum Shabbos much longer. V'im eini yochel avlio. What happens, for example, you have a little mountain of some sort. So you know, if you'd have to count all the amos going up the mountain and then going down on the other side, forget it. It's going to be way more than 50 amos. So what you're allowed to do is, Which, if you translate it literally, it means we drill a hole through the har to figure out what's the distance between one side of the har and the other side of the har. But that's not really exactly what makadrin is. Makadrin is a kula in which we allow different people to stand on this mound, on this incline. Each one is four amas away from the next one. And that's how we're going to calculate with these smaller ropes, which are only four amas instead of the classic 50 ama rope. And two people are going to stand four amas away, one from the other. And they're going to go up, climb up slowly but surely, measuring the shipua hahar. And the kula was that ha'elyon ochis bo keneged raglo v'atachton ochis bo keneged libo. So that although the rope is in a straight line, but it's really one person is holding it near his chest, and the other one on the other side, four amos later, is holding it near his feet. And what's going to happen is, as a result of the 90-degree angle, you're going, right? If, let's say, instead of going from here to here, which is a longer way, you go from here to here, so you're going to shorten the distance, and that was a kula that we set up for medidas tchumit. V'isakadak tchumit doraisam ibekadrinon. I'll give you examples where the Torah requires medida, and we're not going to allow for makadrin. For example, Amar Rab Nachman, Amar Rab Avo, ein makadrin lo be'ore miklot, v'lo be'egla rufa. On a Doraisa level, we need to calculate the distance of the Ir Miklat, right? So he killed somebody, Bishogeg, and he runs the Ir Miklat, and he's protected by the Ir Miklat from the Rotsea, from the Gol Adam, and we have an area around the Ir Miklat, which is called Tchuma Shel Ir Miklat. And even if the Rotzeach entered into the Tchum of the Ir Miklat, he is provided with the protection of the Ir Miklat. Kishem she'ir Miklat koletes es ha-Rotzeach kach Tchuma kol tososo. V'ein lo-hargum nichnas le-Tchuma Ir. So we have to calculate the Tchum of the city of the Ir Miklat, because that Tchum, like the Ir Miklat itself, is kolet. And then we have another mitzvah d'orais that requires medida when we find a slain body between two cities, and we have to measure which is the closest city. And we're not going to allow for something called kodrin, ein makadrin, because makadrin, as we said, shortens the distance, and it's not a real accurate medida. We're only going to allow that for a drabana like erev tchumen, because tchumen is drabana. We're not going to allow it for the d'oraises. So how can you tell me that Rabbi Meir and our Mishnah, in the case where the Eruv flew out or it burnt, and we don't know before Shabbos or after, during Shabbos, we have to be machmir based on the principle of Safik Doraisa L'chumen, when Rabbi Meir embraces the Shita that Tchumen is only Drabanan. Lokasha Hadidei Hadrabe. Really, Rabbi Meir holds, he himself maintains that Tchumen is Doraisa. And that's why in our case, in our Mishnah, he's going to be machmir in a Safik Eruv. But that statement that he made with regard to Suffolk, with regard to Kodrin, that was a statement that he was transmitting in the name of earlier Rebbeim of his, but he never accepted that opinion. So the kula of Kodrin would not be accepted by Rebbe Meir. Daikonami, and I could show it to you from the language of the Mishnah, that this is not really Rabbi Meir himself talking. The Ketani, it says, Bezu Amar Rabbi Dostoy Bar Yanai Mishum Rabbi Meir. Shamati Shemakadrin Behorin. So Rav Dostoy is transmitting in the name of Rabbi Meir the words, Rabbi Meir said the words, Shamati Shemakadrin Behorin. And whenever you hear the word Shamati, then you know he heard it, but he doesn't necessarily agree with it. So we can now suggest that perhaps this is what Rabbi Meir heard from his Rebbeim, but he himself doesn't hold like that, Shmamina, and therefore we could say that Rabbi Meir himself holds that Chumin is Doraisa. V'rami Doraisa Adoraisa. Now we're going to find the stira between two statements of Rabbi Meir with regard to a Sofik Doraisa. This Nan we learned in the Mishnah in Taros in Perkei. Nagabi Echad Balail of any of them Chai Imesu Lemach Ishki Matzumes. So he came in direct contact with her body. He doesn't know when he died. Was he dead already? In the morning he finds that he was dead. Was he dead at the time that he came in contact with him? And Rameh is Matayr. And now we're talking about a Doraisa, and yet Rameh says he's Tar. And we're going to say, Uki Gavra Cheskase. We don't know that he became Tomei. We know that he was Tar, this person who came in contact with the body. And we're going to maintain his status quo. And he's Tar V'chachom Mitamim. Shekol hatumos kishas mitziyosan. According to the Chachamim, we look at the shas mitziyah, the moment that he discovered that the corpse was a dead body, and now he sees that it's a mess. So we're going to say that even at night it was a mess. But anyway, what we want to put the emphasis here is on Reb Meir, who says he's tar. And that means that we're going to rely on a chazaka lahakel, even in a suffik doraisa. So why in a case of suffik eruv, like for example, it became truma tmea, why was Rabbi Meir machmir, even if I grant you that we're dealing with trumin doraisa, but nevertheless, we should be makil. Rabbi Yirmiya responds, Mishnah senu, our Mishnah in the case of truma tmea, where Rabbi Meir was machmir, hoyol leh sheretz kol ben hashmoshos, that we know that during the course of Bein HaShemoshes there was a sheretz on top of the pas. So we know that therefore it became Truma Tmeya Ihochi. That's true. Behol Lema Rabbi Yossi Sofik Eruv V'Kosher. How could Rabbi Yossi and Amishna disagree with Rabbi Meir and be Masha the Eruv when we know that there was a sheretz on the Eruv on top of the pas, all of Bein HaShemoshes? Rabbi Yossi the Amitravayu Hocha B'Shtei Kitei Eidim Askinon. Well, what do we mean when we have proof that the sheretz was there, Ben Hashmosh? We mean according to the testimony of one pair of Edom. Achas Omeris, one pair of Edom says, Mibod Yom Nitma, we saw that the sheretz fell on the pas before Ben Hashmoshos. V'achas Omeris, Mishach HaShecha, the other pair of Edom contradicts and says, no, we saw that the sheretz flew down onto the pas after nightfall, and therefore the Erev is valid. Is therefore, what should we do in this case? Since we have Trey, we have two Edom against two Edom. Is therefore, Rabbi Meir holds, we cannot be Machria and accept the first pair of Edom that said Mibod Yom Tuma, but on the other hand, we can't reject that pair of Edom because they are Edom Ksherim. So therefore, the Chacham have to be Machmir, and we have to be Choshesh for the testimony of the first pair of Edom, and therefore the Cheskas Tahara of the Truma is completely null and void, based on the fact that two Edom have completely undermined this Cheskas Tahara when they testified that already before the entry of Shabbos, it had received Tuma, the Sheretz was on top of the Truma, and therefore we don't have a Chazokah Hila Hakil. And we begin to understand that Rabbi Meir and our Mishnah has to apply the principle of Sofek Doraisa L'Chumra based on the fact that there are two Edom that testify that the Sheretz fell and came in contact with the Truma before the onset of Shabbos. However, in a case where a person had a Cheskes Tara and he came in contact with a corpse, and we don't know whether the person had died already, or maybe he was still alive at the time of Maga, then Rabbi Meir is Metayer, because he's going to say, Uki Gavra Cheskes Tara. So there's no stira. So it comes out to Rabbi Yossi, who's Mekel and Amishna, and a Sufik Truma Vinitmes. He holds that in Shtei Kites, you have two pairs of Edom that contradict each other. Then we just throw them out of court completely. We don't know what to do with this case. So we get back to our original status in which the Truma has a Cheskes Tara, because that's what it was at the time that he left it there as an Eruv. And finally, Rava says, even in the case where he touched somebody at night, it's talking about a case of Trey, Kite, Edom, Achish, and Zuzu. One pair of Edom says that at the time that he came in contact with this body, it was already a corpse. And the other pair of Edom say, no, when he came in contact with the body was still alive. And Rabbi Meir said that in such a case, he is tahar. And don't ask that as a kash, as a steer against Rabbi Meir in our Mishnah, in the case of Truma Tmeya, who disqualifies the Erev Hasam. There, in the case of someone who touched a body at night, Trei Chazke Lekula, Rabbi Meir is Metar because of two Chazakas. Number one, you have the Chazaka of Hamed Adam Al Cheskaso. In other words, until we know a person dies, and died, we assume he's alive. Number two, Hamed Nogea Al Cheskaso, the person who came in contact with this Safek mess, he himself had a Cheskas Tara. So we have two Chazakas now, on which Rabbi Meir relies to say that he's tar, but Hacha, now a case in our mission of an heir of Betruma, and we don't know exactly when it became Tame, then it's Chara Chazaka Lekula. We only have one Chazaka to rely on, and that's the Cheskes Tara of the Truma, and we assume that it was tar, therefore even Ben Hashmashzu was tar. In such a case, the Chacham were Machmir, and they were Choshesh for that one single pair of Eidim that said that we know for sure that this Truma had contracted Tuma at the onset of Shabbos. And that one pair of, that Eidus of one pair of Eidim is enough to undermine the Cheskes Tara of the Truma, and therefore Rabbi Meir is going to say there's no Cheskes Tara to rely on, we have to be Machmir, and the Erev is therefore invalid. And this, Rabosa, is where we're going to stop for today, on the top of Daf Lamed Vav Amid Aleph, and we're up to Kasha Adrab Yossi on the second line on Daf Lamed Vav Amid Aleph. So I'll bid you all a wonderful day.